Stay tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Bob Doty reporting. U.S. President Barack Obama Wednesday ordered 450 more American military trainers to Iraq in a new effort to bolster Iraqi troops as they try to retake Ramadi, the Anbar provincial capital seized last month by Islamic State insurgents. The White House said the extra trainers would augment the 3,100 trainers the U.S. already has in Iraq. But Mr. Obama is continuing to rule out sending ground troops back into Iraq after withdrawing them in 2011. Statement said the president is adding the new trainers at the request of Iraqi Prime Minister Haider al-Abadi and the recommendation of U.S. defense chiefs. The White House said Mr. Obama has ordered officials to intensify their efforts to stem the flow of foreign fighters into Iraq and Syria out of fear they will eventually return home and carry out attacks. A suicide bomber blew himself up Wednesday outside the ancient Karnak Temple in southern Egypt in an attack that left four people wounded. Officials said the attack involved two other people who were killed by police and that none of the wounded were tourists. The temple in the city of Luxor is part of a UNESCO World Heritage Site on the banks of the Nile River. There was no immediate claim of responsibility. Burundi's embattled president has officially delayed the presidential election after weeks of protests sparked by his decision to run for a third term. President Pierre Nkurunziza issued a decree Wednesday that moves the presidential vote from June 26th to July 15th. It also revises the dates for National Assembly and Senate elections. This is VOA News. The bidding process for the 2026 Football World Cup has been postponed amid the bribery allegations engulfing the sports world governing body, FIFA. The United States has been seen as a front-runner for hosting the competition. Henry Ridgewell reports from London.
While FIFA may be paralyzed by the allegations of corruption, in the Russian city of Samara, construction continues on the 45,000-seat stadium scheduled to host some of the games of the 2018 World Cup. FIFA Secretary General Jerome Valcke toured the venue Tuesday amid accusations of bribery in the bids to host the 2018 and 2022 World Cups. FIFA announced the bidding process for the 2026 event would be postponed.
Due to the situation, I think it's a nonsense to start any bidding process for the time being.
If the corruption allegations are proven, the huge construction projects could be a waste of money and human lives. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Italian Prime Minister Matteo Renzi met with Russian President Vladimir Putin on Wednesday in Milan, where the two leaders were attending the Expo 2015 International Fair. Underlying Italy's differences with Russia over Moscow's annexation of Crimea and support for separatists in eastern Ukraine, Mr. Renzi spoke of divergent positions between the two countries on some issues, while praising their traditional friendship. At a summit earlier this week, the group of seven developed nations, including Italy, reaffirmed sanctions imposed against Moscow for its actions in Ukraine. The U.S. and its Western allies have accused Russia of supporting the insurgency in eastern Ukraine with arms and troops. Russia has repeatedly denied the accusations. South Korean President Park Geun-hye has postponed next week's planned visit to the United States to help her country deal with an outbreak of Middle East Respiratory Syndrome, or MERS. The president's office said Ms. Park will reschedule the trip to Washington, where she was told to hold talks with President Barack Obama. It is not known when the trip will be rescheduled. Myanmar opposition leader Aung San Suu Kyi has begun a visit to China to bolster diplomatic ties that have been tested as a result of her country's democratic reforms. China's Communist Party, a major ally of Myanmar's former military junta, is hosting the Myanmar democracy icon. The European Union's Justice Agency says it has arrested dozens of suspects in an international identity theft sting that involved millions of euros stolen from bank accounts. The agency, known as Eurojust, announced Wednesday it has arrested 49 suspects, mostly from Nigeria and Cameroon. I'm Bob Doty in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib, and coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight...
Burundi is delaying its presidential elections following protests against the president's bid for a third term in office. The move comes as regional bodies urge continued dialogue with the opposition to resolve the political crisis in the country.
That's VOA's Gabe Jaslow reporting. Details coming up.
Also, the European Union urges its 28 members to agree to a plan to share responsibility for resettling migrants. And in Nigeria, military officials announced that Maiduguri International Airport will soon reopen.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story this hour, Burundi is delaying its presidential elections following protest against the president's bid for a third term in office. VOA's Gabe Joslow reports the move comes as regional bodies urge continued dialogue with the opposition to resolve the political crisis in the country.
Burundi's president, Pierre Nkurunziza, issued a decree late Tuesday postponing the presidential vote to July 15th, about 2 weeks later than initially planned. Parliamentary elections have also been pushed back about a month and are now scheduled to be held June 29th. Presidential spokesman Gervais Abayeho told VOA the new timetable is designed to give the opposition time to organize for the vote.
Those opposition parties were claiming that they didn't have enough time to campaign given the situation that was prevailing here, so that they can be given ample time to do so. That is the motivation behind that.
Opposition parties and civil society activists have led weeks of street protests against President Nkurunziza's plan to run for a third term in office, which opponents say would be against the law. Some opposition leaders rejected the new timetable for elections when it was first proposed by the country's Electoral Commission. A spokesman for an opposition coalition told VOA Daybreak Africa Tuesday the commission did not have the legal mandate to change the dates. The election delay is in line with recommendations put forward last month by East African heads of state. Meantime, the International Conference of the Great Lakes region has urged the government to continue a national dialogue with members of the opposition and civil society to find a way out of the current crisis. Ambei Ligabo is the director of the ICGLR Governance and Democracy Program.
We are optimistic that both parties can see sense in the need to have dialogue to avoid any violence and also disruption of economic and trade activities among member states of ICGLR.
The United Nations has raised concerns about an escalation in political violence around the polls. On Tuesday, the High Commissioner for Human Rights, Zayed Ra'ad Al Hussein, said the United Nations has been receiving deeply worrying accounts of executions, abductions, and other violent acts attributed to pro-government militia. Gabe Joslow, VOA News, Nairobi.
The European Union is urging its 28 members to agree to sharing responsibility for resettling migrants. Tens of thousands are expected over the next 2 years. Under the plan, migrants would be distributed across the EU according to each nation's unemployment rate, size, and economic output. That would mean most asylum seekers would be resettled in Germany, France, Italy, and Spain. Britain already has opted out. Hungary, Slovakia, and Estonia also have rejected the idea. Britain, Denmark, and Ireland have exemptions to agreements with the EU regarding asylum and border patrols. London wants the EU to do more to target smugglers in Libya who profit from transporting refugees. The UN says nearly 52,000 migrants have entered Europe this year, mostly by crossing the Mediterranean Sea from North Africa. A large proportion of the migrants arrive by boat in Italy and Greece. So far, nearly 50,000 have died trying to reach Europe.
Libyan officials suspect there could be up to 1 million illegal immigrants in this country, some working but most planning or hoping to board smugglers' boats for the perilous sea crossing to Italy. The officials say Libya, which is ensnared in civil conflict itself, can't cope. And VOA saw for itself this week the inadequacy of detention centers in the Libyan capital. Jamie Detmer has more from Tripoli, Libya.
Collins, a 30-year-old Ghanaian, is in tears when he talks to me in a noisy and crowded detention centre in the Libyan capital of Tripoli.
They gave us food. I want to go back to Ghana. I love my country. I just came to raise enough money to go and start my business. I was into construction business. I was renting out scaffold and tools and equipment. But just to come here, gather some money, and to enlarge my business.
He's squatting under the scorching Libyan sun in the centre's yard with about 300 other illegal immigrants caught by Libyan police or militias, either trying to reach Europe aboard people smuggling boats or working illegally in this strife-torn North African country. The guards order the men and boys to bow their heads, but when they hear VOA questioning why, they shout at the detainees to look up. One guard pokes them with a stick, but throws it away when a colleague whispers in his ear. Richard, a 28-year-old Ghanaian, a plasterer, says,
"We are praying that they can do something, that they can free us. If they are not freeing us, they can take us back to our country so that we can get our freedom. Because we are here, we are suffering too much. The pain is too much."
The guards at this small detention centre on Tripoli's airport road are mainly militiamen, untrained to cope with migrants, and it shows. They're doing the best they can, but lack of training, the potential threat of violence from the desperate migrants, and utterly inadequate and insanitary conditions are all making their job harder. The centre's director, Maloud Juma Salim, says the migrants come from nearly every sub-Saharan African nation. He sees me saddened by the tale of woe coming from the migrants. None, though, accuse the guards of mistreatment. He says, "I should remember that some of these men are criminals. Last night," he says, "they tried to break out through a window to escape. These people cause many problems," he says. The facilities are squalid. The men are crowded at night into two small, albeit long, covered warehouses with just weak overhead fans to cool the nights for them. They have no distractions, and there's no specialised health assistance for those with complex illnesses. The director says Libya needs the international community's help to put up purpose-built facilities that can cope with the numbers coming through and that are safe for the detainees. He says a couple of TVs would help, and so would air conditioning for the summer and heaters for the cold winter nights. He adds, these people are human beings in the end. Karim, a 22-year-old car mechanic from Senegal, had been waiting for 4 months in Libya trying to get on a smuggler's boat. He was caught 2 weeks ago, and when VOA asks if he was caught out at sea, he says forlornly,
No, not in the boat, not yet in the boat.
Okay. Libyan detention centres are bulging with such migrants whose dreams of a better life in Europe are dashed. Jamie Detmar for VOA News, Tripoli.
In Nigeria, military officials have announced that Maiduguri International Airport will soon reopen. It was closed 2 years ago due to attacks by the rebel group Boko Haram. Maiduguri is the capital of Borno State in the northeastern part of the country. Air Marshal Adeshola Amosu says the Nigerian Airport Management Authority had requested the airport be allowed to operate between 6 a.m. and 6 p.m. He says the airport could be closed at any time if there's a security threat. President Buhari recently announced that Maiduguri is the new location for the military command and control center, aiding in the fight against Boko Haram. The center had been located in the country's capital, Abuja.
Minutes past the hour. This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. Well, it's estimated thousands of children in Ghana work in dangerous, unlicensed gold mines. A new report says they risk injury when mines collapse and are exposed to dust and mercury poisoning. VOA's Joe DiCapua reports.
The 82-page Human Rights Watch report, Precious Metal, Cheap Labor, documents the use of child workers in Ghana's gold mines. These mines are often small-scale or subsistence mines, known as artisanal or unlicensed gold mines. HRW senior researcher Julianne Kippenberg spoke about the findings from Accra.
This has been going on for a long time because artisanal and small-scale gold mining is a very long-standing and old practice in Ghana, but also in other parts of West Africa. Child labor in this sector is something that's also been going on for a very long time. According to a recent survey by the government, around 7,400 children are working in mining.
The gold mines are often shallow pits that can collapse, causing injury or death.
We also found that many children do the processing of the ore with mercury. And mercury is a toxic metal. It's liquid and it's used to attract the gold particles in the ore. It's very practical for that, but it's also highly poisonous and particularly dangerous for children whose bodies are still developing. We met one guy who was actually carrying around with him a small bottle of mercury that he was sort of carrying in his trousers.
Mercury poisoning has many symptoms. They include tremors, vomiting, hearing loss, psychiatric problems, chest pain, paralysis, headaches, seizures, and death. Mercury is openly sold in many shops in Ghana's mining areas.
There are other problems too. Some boys carry extremely heavy loads, and this causes really strong pain for them, but also can obviously lead to long-term spinal damage.
And then there's the dust.
Some of the children that we interviewed complained about coughs and other respiratory problems and that they were spitting out blood.
Kippenberg says many children want to work in the mines because they receive some payment or some gold in return. But she says they're often unaware of the risks. Ghana has many different mining areas, but Human Rights Watch has been conducting its research in the Western, Central, and Ashanti regions since 2013. Overall, Kippenberg says, gold mining employs between 500,000 and 1 million people. Last year, the industry produced about 40 tons of gold worth more than $1.7 billion. The gold travels a long supply chain, from local traders to exporters and then on to the global market. Switzerland, South Africa, the United Arab Emirates, and India are some of the major destinations.
You have many, many different sort of local traders and some exporters who then sell on to an even smaller number of global refiners. There are only about 20 or so international refiners of importance that refine pretty much all the gold there is in the world. So these refiners hold a very important position in that supply chain. And from there onwards, they then sell on to jewelry, banks, electronics industry, and so on.
The Human Rights Watch researcher says some refiners and exporters do attempt to adhere to Ghanaian and international law regarding child labor. Nevertheless, she says, they often do not have full control over the supply chain and may not know the origin of the gold. Kippenberg says Ghana's government has taken some action to deal with the problem.
First of all, child labor in mining is actually prohibited by law, and that's quite a good and strong law. The government also has a sector that is formalized. So there are about 1,300 or so holders of licenses that actually have formalized mine licenses. So this is very important because it means that these holders of licenses have to abide by certain rules, including no use of child labor, and they will be inspected by the government for that.
However, she says, the vast majority of the artisanal gold mines are not licensed.
Child labor is occurring. There are no inspections, no interventions. It's just taking place.
Human Rights Watch is calling for greater government oversight of Ghana's gold mining and the use of alternatives to mercury in gold processing.
In 2013, governments came together and adopted the UN Minamata Convention on Mercury to protect internationally people from the threat of that pollutant. And the government of Ghana has signed that convention but hasn't ratified it. And we believe it's really necessary that Ghana ratifies and implements that convention.
Kippenberg also says the government-owned Precious Minerals Marketing Corporation, or PMMC, should require gold traders to follow human rights law when issuing them licenses. The government, she says, should also ensure that education and food programs reach children in gold mining areas. Human Rights Watch calls on the Ghanaian government to lead the way in Africa by developing a comprehensive strategy for safe, professional and child labor-free gold mining. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
A new report says human trafficking and child labor is on the decline in Cameroon after the government enacted tough laws and began vigorously prosecuting offenders. Moki Edwin Kindeka has more on the story from Yaoundé.
I know that I can make it. I know that I can stand. No matter what may come my way, my
life. Nadesh Nge, 28 years old, sings to praise the network of Cameroon Women, an association created 25 years ago to press for strong legislation on forced labor and sex trafficking. Nadesh was only 8 years old when she was forced into working as a servant in the home of an influential state functionary in Cameroon's capital, Yaoundé. Her family had been promised $20 a month. She eventually escaped and was taken in and trained by the network of Cameroon Women. Today, she is a lawyer committed to defending the rights of women who are going through what she experienced.
For the younger generation, I would say, especially to young women, do not let society dictate who you should be. Be yourself. And it's only then that we can be able to change the world. Because if we don't begin with us, where are we going?
The Network of Cameroon Women has issued a report showing a drop in the number of cases of women and children forced into labor and the sex trade. The report notes that the network had 275 cases in 1990, and today it is handling 150 cases. The group notes its biggest challenge is trying to track the young women sent to Europe by sex traffickers. Justice Prudence Galiga, technical advisor to Cameroon's Minister of the Environment, says she thinks the biggest factor is the drop came about once women felt they could report cases of abuse and violence. She credits the 1995 Beijing World Conference on Women, in which delegates left determined to work for greater equality and opportunities through legislation to eliminate discriminatory practices.
Beijing had raised awareness that women could effectively be agents of change in their communities if they created the space to make their voices heard.
She says the Beijing Declaration cleared the way for women in Cameroon to press for changes in laws when it came to prosecuting abusers and child traffickers. She says the case building process has been streamlined and the arduous requirements for children to prove abuse have been amended. Now, says Justice Galiga, there are more cases successfully prosecuted, even cases involving senior government officials.
You will agree with me today that it's not easy for you to get a little girl of 8 or 7 years and to pay her 5,000 francs or 10,000 a month to take care of your children. Gone are those days when that could happen, because was able to get into parliament with victims to advocate the first law that was adopted in this country to convict traffickers in children.
But advocates note there is still a long way to go. According to Global Giving, a U.S.-based charity dedicated to grassroots projects, 2.4 million Cameroonian children still illegally work mostly in the homes of the rich to help support their families. Are Merlin, who runs a center to provide psychological care of victims, says it is so easy to deceive children and young women with promises of a better life.
When they take someone, there is an agreement. Either maybe you register for work as a tailor or a hairdresser, or you go to school. And most of the time, they end up just being in the house. At times, they're beaten very brutally. At times, hot objects like irons are used on them. They give them sour food to eat. You not treat a fellow human being like an animal. Even dogs are not to be treated that way.
Justice Galiga says the women of Cameroon are working hard to address these remaining challenges.
Today we have task forces made up of judges, made up of civil society organizations to see how they could combat this phenomenon out of our society. That is an example of what women can do and women have begun doing. We want to invite the men to join, and I think we would make a significant impact.
Cameroon's 2011 anti-trafficking law mandates sentences of up to 20 years when the trafficking victim is 15 years or younger. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
Well, public outcry in Parliament have forced Malawian President Peter Mutharika to suspend the sale of a state-owned bank which has been weighed down by bad loans. Lamek Messina reports from Johannesburg.
The attempted sale of the Malawi Savings Bank was in response to advice from the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund after banking experts said the MSB failed to meet the minimum liquidity requirements. The institutions also said they observed that the politically connected persons got huge loans from the MSB but were failing to pay them, a move they said was compromising the bank's operation. This forced Malawi officials to look for investors to buy controlling stakes in the bank. The privately owned FDH Financial Holdings Limited became the only bidder, offering about $12 million for the purchase of the 75% of the bank's shares, a move which parliamentarians described as an epic swindle. Ryan OGP was the chairperson for the Parliament's Budget and Finance Committee.
The committee's stand was the process of selling this bank hasn't been good, and the bidding process didn't actually have a lot of bidders in it. We really wanted the process to be started again.
The parliamentarians also argued that with over 70 branches countrywide, MSB was the only bank which covered most rural areas where over 80% of Malawians live. They said selling it would deprive these Malawians of banking services. Civil society groups have pushed for the bank to be recapitalized instead of being sold. In May, they had protests after the government announced that it would pay off $13 million owed to the bank by private sector players, the vast majority of whom were the ruling party's politicians. In a petition to parliament, the group said they would not allow taxpayers' money to be used to pay off loans for greedy politicians and businessmen. They threatened to hold vigils at parliament and all MSB branches nationwide unless the government complied with their demand. Jared Viola's President Mutharika's spokesperson. He told VOA the suspension of the bank sale is not a response to any pressure.
The president has not been defeated. If anything, it is democracy which is at stake here. Look, we have a president who is listening to those that are against and those that are for and come up with a binding solution.
Viola also said the government has established a debt collection unit to ensure those who borrowed the money from the MSB pay back their loans. Parliamentarian Jessica Bwira is the spokesperson of the leading opposition party in parliament, the Malawi Congress Party. She says the party is treating the suspension with a touch of skepticism.
We welcome the suspension. We are just want to be cautious that this should not be a way to just buy time so that the budget is passed and then we see the issue come back again. So for us, we would have been happier with a cancellation of this whole thing, because that one would totally have been in tandem with what Malawians are trying to say.
Economists have warned that the uncertainty surrounding the bank could cause customers to withdraw their deposits, a situation that would make the bank's financial position even worse. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Johannesburg.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. Stay tuned for Straight Talk Africa with Shaka Sali, coming up at 18:30 UTC. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at www.voaafrica.com. And on behalf of our African News Tonight producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Kelvin Fowler, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Looking for something? Headline news, interviews, analysis? We've got it all on voaafrica.com.
voaafrica.com.